walk alone. Step by step.
Welcome to the meeting. We're going to get started. And before we get started, I've asked Ryan to come up and share a joke with us. Ryan.
Hi, I'm Ryan. I'm an alcoholic. How do you keep a room full of alcoholics in suspense? Thank you. I'll see you next week.
All right, welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Thursday night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Chris. Thank you for joining us tonight. In a moment, we're going to start our two-minute silent meditation, so semi-silent meditation. So please take a moment to get situated. Please turn off all devices that make noise or that might slash will distract others. Take this time to get connected to God, let the craziness of the day drift away, and ask God to help you stay focused on the step study tonight. Is everybody ready? If so, let's start the meditation. Fred's going to take the lights down. I'm going to lead us in the fog light prayer. If you don't know it, you can look up here or simply repeat after me. God, let your love shine through me like a fog light, so those who are lost, sick, and dying can find your love through me. There is a solution from the Big Book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree, and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. I've asked Randy to read Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. We read this because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one, so it's kind of important to know what one is.
recovering alcoholic.
Hey, Ray.
Spiritual experience. The term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself in many different forms. Yet it is true, our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of a sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quiet, often friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is in himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer.
Please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so set your phones to airplane, meeting mode, or simply turn them off. Well, tonight it's my honor to introduce our speaker. He's on our fourth session, in his fourth session with us. And I know that every session thus far has really said things that have touched my heart and spoken to me about Alcoholics Anonymous, the program, in a way that's really spectacular. So without further ado, Pat.
I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Pat Rogan. And thanks to the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous outlined in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is the program of AA, I have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, and that, for that I will be forever grateful. AA didn't just give me my life back, but it gave me one worth living, and I have an absolute blast in recovery. And enjoy life. I always open with that because I like to say, if there's anybody new in the room, that if you're being told that this is a one day at a time struggle to stay clean and sober, you're being misinformed, because that's not what it's about. You know, it's about getting free, you know, and that's what this program is. Step four, huh? Yeah, I don't know why it gets that reaction. I really don't, and it does. I mean, that seems to be what happens here, right? One, two, three out. One, two, three out. You know, everybody like that does the one, two, three shuffle. You know, and they don't take the action required to recover. And because we haven't done anything up to this point, really. I mean, we've gotten a lot of informationally. We've done a lot. We've accumulated a lot of information. We've basically come to two conclusions and made a decision. We haven't taken any action at all up until this point to treat our condition. And now it's about time to do that. I mean, we've concluded that we're alcoholic and that we cannot manage our own. We concluded what it means to be alcoholic, That's this inability to stay stopped and this inability to control it once we start, this choice and control issue, is really all you need to conclude as to whether you're an alcoholic or an addict or not. You know, either if you can stay stopped under your own power, then you're not one of us. You know, our book is clear that if you can stay clean and sober based on a non-spiritual basis, then you're not an alcoholic or an addict. That we're the real alcoholic. The page 21 deal. We do incredibly tragic things while drinking. We resemble ourselves but little when we're out there drinking. The Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, you know, getting tight exactly the wrong moments, you know, like Christmas Eve, you know, and just how could you? I don't know. Stop to have a couple drinks. You know? We're that guy that should, you know, I'm that guy that should sleep around the clock, you know, but I'm up early the next day looking for a bottle or looking for a fix, you know, and I'm that guy. And that's who we're targeting here. That's what this program is about. We're, you know, our book says if you can stop on your own, our hats are off to you. Go have at it. We're not on a membership drive here, you know. We don't need members, you know. I've said it before, and I don't mean any disrespect, but if you're that person that can use willpower to stay stopped, we just assume you not be here. You know, I mean, really. I don't want you sharing that in my AA meeting. I don't want some man or woman that's sitting here that's going to die if they don't find a spiritual solution. Hear somebody share that they've been able to do it on a non-spiritual basis. You don't belong here. That's the one requirement for membership for Alcoholics Anonymous. There is only one requirement, and that's it. A desire to stop drinking. And if you can stop drinking, then, you know, go have at it, you know. So, I mean, really, the two questions on 44 are what it means to be an alcoholic. If and when you want to stay stopped, you find you can't because of the obsession of the mind, and once you start, you can't control it because of the allergy of the body, then you're in. Have a seat. And our solution is of a spiritual nature. You know, you guys read it. I mean, the tremendous fact is just this and nothing less. You know, the tremendous fact is we have found a common solution. You know, that's the great news that we carry in this fellowship. You know, the great fact is just this and nothing less, that we've had deep and effective spiritual experiences that have revolutionized our lives. The central fact of my life today is God has entered my heart and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous in commencing to do for me what I cannot do for myself. You know, and that is expel the obsession to drink or drug. Yeah. And we have to buy into that. We don't have to believe it, but we have to buy into it. We have to be willing to believe it. We have to be willing to believe that I believe it. There is no second requirement here. You just have to be willing to believe that we believe. Bill even goes as far 13 years later when he writes the 12 and 12, goes as far as to say you could use this group for now. Be willing to believe that the group believes. Because he knows that if you follow these precise, specific, clear-cut, exact directions, that God will appear in your life. God will manifest him or herself in your heart itself, whatever your conception of God may be. Yeah. And those are the two conclusions. A, that I'm alcoholic, and B, that no human power could solve my alcoholism, and C, that God could and would if he were sought. I mean, being sold on those three pertinent ideas, being convinced of those three pertinent ideas, we move into making a decision whether we're in or out. Are we in or are we out? You know, are we going to seek the solution, or are we going to try this on our own again? And you can try it on your own here. Many people do. Many people stay here and try it on their own. They make a decision, but they never take any action. You see it all the time. They're hanging in there. You know, how you doing? Hanging in there. You know? How's that feel? Because that's not what my recovery is about. I'm not just hanging in there. You see them. You see them walking around. Eyes in the ground, wrinkled ass forehead, you know. How you doing? All right, I'm hanging in there. Yeah. My third meeting today, you know. You know. Get up tomorrow and do three again. Do three more. Just got to get through the day, that's all. Like, four more hours, so I'll get through the day. Hanging in there. Who wants that? You know, who wants that? That's struggling one moment at a time to stay clean and sober. That's not what I came here for. I can do that on my own. But that's what sobriety is, right? That's what that is. You know, that's staying here, getting the information, and doing nothing about it. And step three is about making the decision to take some action. You know, the whole conversation changed last week, right? It went from physical and mental. The doctor brings up this physical and mental aspect. He touches on this restlessness, this irritability, and the discontent. But the conversation last week changed to behavioral. Right? We got really away from the obsession and the compulsion, and we got into behavior. Right? Why is that? Why all of a sudden are we talking about my behavior? Because it's my behavior that's putting me in conflict with the world and creating this restlessness, this irritability, and this discontent inside of me, which needs to be treated somehow, some way, whether it's with a drink or medication, but it needs to be treated. You know, I have put myself in conflict with the world. My selfish desires to fulfill the basic instincts of life that make up self-will, my compulsion to fulfill those desires has put me in conflict with everybody. My need for attention, my need to be liked and accepted, my need for material goods, my need for a more car, a bigger house, my need for emotional security, my need for you to depend on me or my codependence on you, and my need for sex and more sex and more sex and different place sex, those desires, my behavior, has put me in conflict with the world. Yeah. Restless, irritable, discontent, you betcha. You betcha. Because everybody's pushing back. Because I'm pulling more than my share of everything out of life. Why? Because it's pleasurable. Because it feels good to satisfy those instincts. So good that I can't get enough of them. Yeah. And so I end up stepping on everybody's toes. And they tell us what's really killing us. The whole conversation shifted. They're not even talking about liquor anymore in the third step, were they? They're not even bringing up booze anymore. They're saying, you know what your problem is? Your problem is that you're selfish and you're self-centered and you're driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-pity. You step on the toes of your fellows and they're retaliating. Oh, and here's the rub. There seems no way of you overcoming them without with God's help. That you can't stop yourself. You can't control yourself. You must have God's help. And here's the requirement. You need a new director. That's the requirement. You need to put somebody else in charge. You've destroyed your life and everybody's life around you. You're making a mess at running your life. You need to hire a new director. And that's really what the third step, that's the decision. The decision is he is the director. I am the actor. He is the principal. I am the agent. He is the father. I am the child. This is the new position that we're going to take from here on in. That I'm no longer in charge. I can't run my own life. And I'm trying to run yours. I'm trying to run yours, and I can't run mine. That's what we do, though, isn't it? Take the focus off of me and put it on you, man. As soon as somebody says something to us we don't like, boom. Well, you're ugly. You know? Well, you did this, you did that. It wasn't for you doing this, I wouldn't have done that. We point. That's what I did, deflect. But it's us. Yeah. And if we could take such a position, a decision to take that position, if we could take such a position, the next words are remarkable things are going to happen. We have a new employer who keeps us safe and protected if what? If we do his work well. We got a new job. To do his work. We're no longer the, Bill uses the Broadway example, you know, we're no longer the actor trying to run the show. We're the actor and we're going to listen to the director. You know, that's the deal. But I don't know how to do that. I can't, I'm not even capable of doing that. And that's why it's a decision. I don't know if I share with you guys or not. I forget where I'm at in half of these step series. And if I, you know, I was sitting on the third step. I fell in with a crowd of men and women who wouldn't let you move on until you had that step. I had no idea. I finally ran into a real teacher in this program. But, you know, you don't move on to four until you get three. So I'm sitting on three, hanging in there, you know, hanging in there one day at a time, going to Denny's and not drinking, you know, three, four meetings a day. I mean, I swear to God, that was my life. 8 o'clock meeting, try to catch the noon. If you don't catch noon, catch the 5:30, catch the 7, catch the 8:30. Go to Denny's. Right. Get up the next morning, follow it again. I didn't know. I'm sitting on 3 thinking something's supposed to happen there. And this is what I was told. You don't move on to 4 till you get 3. You know? And if you're struggling with 4, this is the best suggestion. If you're struggling with 4, then you need to move back to 3. Right? That is such a crock of shit. You know? That is so against everything this program says. You know? You know what the act of making a decision, you know how you complete the decision in step 3? You do 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. That's how you learn how to turn your will and your life. I shared with you guys. I had no idea what you were talking about. Turn it over. What the hell does that mean? Turn it over. My business is collapsing. I'm going through a divorce. I have a restraining order on me. I have a court date coming up because she pressed charges. Turn it over. Yeah, I'll turn it over to an attorney, you know. Pray on it. What? The next, I didn't talk much about the third step prayer, but the third step prayer really validates that position. That's what it is. We're praying to validate the new position, that he's the father, we're the child, he's the principal, we're the agent. Now let's validate that. Let's do a prayer. You know, God, I offer myself to thee to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of me. Relieve me of the bondage of myself so that I can do your will. There's a rub, right? It's terms of surrender, right? So that I can do your will. Take away my difficulties. Why? So victory over them will bear witness to your power, your love, and your way of life. It's terms of surrender. May I do your will always. And then what? Next. That's what my book says. Next. Now. Then it's followed by at once. Right? That this prayer, although we'll get some relief here, although we may have a new understanding of what my problem is, maybe my problem isn't just drinking and drugging. Maybe my problem is me. I've got some new information. And we might even get some relief here, but it's not going to last because the ego has amazing recuperative power. Amazing recuperative power. And all of a sudden, I think, I got this. Because there's work involved now. There's work. Who wants to do that? Who wants to inventory? Who was ever even told to inventory before they got here? Right? Who ever thought of inventory before they got here? Right? Oh, you pissed me off. Hold on, let me do an inventory, you know? The hell, I never even heard of it before. Yeah, I need to see where I'm at fault. Hold on a second. You know, what? Who wants to do that? Nobody wants to do that. Right? Nobody, unless your life depends on it. Because that's what we're told right after the third step. Little or no effect. It will have no lasting effect unless at once followed by an effort to be rid of the things that are blocking us from the sunlight of the Spirit, the things that are blocking us from God. That alcohol was but a symptom of an underlying issue. It tells us flat out, alcohol is a symptom, not the problem. There's something else going on. Boy, I knew that. I knew that. I knew there was something else going on. Bill talks about, and he just nails it right there. You know, he uses it, he goes and confuses us a little bit with the business inventory. But he's really telling us this is an effort to find the facts, face the facts, and learn the truth about ourselves, right? I think that's part of the confusion. We read this fourth step, you know, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. We go, oh my God, immoral, I'm immoral. You know, I need to write the list of dirty, nasty things I did. And that's not what it says. And Bill was a wordsmith. Bill was a literature major. If Bill wanted us to write a list of dirty, nasty things, he would have used the words immoral or amoral. He uses the word moral. Moral means truth. It's an effort to face the fact, to find out the truth about ourselves and face the truth about ourselves. What's the truth? What is the truth? I don't have a clue, really. I know this, the conversation flips again, right? We went mental, and physical at the beginning. We just flipped the conversation in step three to behavioral. Bill's going to flip it again to spiritual. That we suffer from a spiritual sickness. It manifests itself in what? Anger, resentment, fear, guilt, remorse, and shame. Right? This behavior that we're partaking in, this need to satisfy these instincts, this perversion of these instincts, these God-given instincts that have put me in conflict, has caused me to suffer from a spiritual malady, manifesting itself in resentment, fear, and guilt, remorse, and shame. Yeah. And we see it, right? Selfish and self-centered people are always pissed off. Yeah. Always pissed off. Look what they did to me. Can you believe they did that to me? Yeah. Always full of fear. I'm going to lose what I got. I'm not going to get what I want. You're going to find out what I did. You're going to find out who I am. You're going to find out really what I really want. Right. And we're full of guilt and remorse and shame because we step on everybody's toes. Yeah. We lie, we cheat, we steal to satisfy these instinctual drives. Yeah. This is the key. These instinctual drives are the key to this whole program, in my opinion. They're the key to the whole program. This is the whole point of the exercise, is to expose that, that I have perverted those instincts. And because I've perverted them, I'm in conflict. And in that conflict, I have to deal with this anger and this fear and this guilt and remorse and shame, right? Resentment, incorrect thinking. Fear, incorrect feeling. Guilt, remorse, and shame, incorrect behavior. Harms done others, right? That's the... Look, if you're a doctor, if you break an arm, you go to a doctor. If you got mind problems, you go to a psychiatrist. You're suffering from a spiritual problem, there's only a spiritual solution. There is no chemical solution to a spiritual problem. We wish there were. I shared that with you last week. If they had a chemical solution for us, we'd be looking for another delivery system, right? We'd be crushing that bitch. Or cooking it or something. Where are my crackheads? They'd be smoking it. Put that shit in a pipe. You crush me three of those bitches, man, right? Here's what Bill says right before the fourth step, right before the directions. That unless, you know, although we had been mentally and physically sick, that unless we overcome this spiritual malady, malady meaning sickness, unless we overcome this spiritual sickness, we will never recover. We will never overcome our alcoholism. This spiritual sickness. I think the real addict and alcoholic knows exactly what that is. The doctor called it restless, irritable, and discontent. Right? Call it anxiety. Call it fear. I don't even know what to label it. All I know is there's something going on inside of me emotionally that prevents me from dealing with life sober. I just can't go through life unmedicated. I just don't do it well. I need some stimulus. I need something to stimulate my emotions, something to take me out of that feeling. You know, being dry in Alcoholics Anonymous, coming in here and spending my first 3 months dry in Alcoholics Anonymous, I know now why people cut. I never understood that before. I never understood cutters. Like, why could you do that? I get it. I get it. Because anything that will kill that pain, I will partake in. And it's no different than taking a medication, than taking a drug or a drink, and you know where it's going. You know where it's going. It's not even like, I didn't know. Yes, you did. Yeah. You didn't care. Right? Now, that's the real addict and alcoholic. If I take this, I'm going to jail. Fuck it. We'll say shit like, I don't care. You don't care if you go to prison? Of course you care. Of course you care. Of course I cared. This is divorce if I drink this. Fuck it. Why? How could we? That's what the rest of the world says, right? How could you? How could you keep jumping out in front of a car and getting hit and do it over and over and over again? How can you do that? Because there's something spiritually wrong inside me. I'm a freaking emotional cripple. That's what I am. I'm an emotional cripple. I don't know why. I don't know if I was born an emotional cripple. I don't know if I drug my ass into an emotional crippling state. I don't know if I drank my ass there. I don't know. I don't know if she cheated and that was, I don't know. You know? I don't know. Right? Maybe I was born that way. I don't know. All I know is I can remember being that cripple at 5. I was the cripple on my way to first grade throwing up from fear because I didn't want to go. I was that emotional cripple that had his homework done but wouldn't get in front of the class and read it. Because you might laugh. I might be wrong. I'm too short. I'm ugly. You know? I look back at my pictures when I was a kid. I wasn't really an ugly kid. You know, I thought I was. Did anybody else have that perception of themselves when they looked in the mirror and they go, oh my God, what a beast. All right, my nose, my ears, I got pimples, I got freckles on my freaking, oh my God. I'm not unique, I'm an ogre. Too short, too skinny, just nothing about me. I hated everything about me until I got halfway through that bottle of Boone's Farm Strawberry Hill. Then I love me. And then anything else from there, my drug of choice became whatever you had from then on. You know, you want one of these? Of course. Which way are we going? I don't know. How many started drinking before they were 14? How many 12? Like, you didn't even develop emotionally. You didn't even come close to developing emotionally, and you crippled yourself. Yeah. Right? I mean, look, I started at 16. I was immature, you know, slow starter compared to you guys. Guys are coming in young now, man. No kidding. We're emotionally crippled. No kidding. Started using before you even developed. A lot of you come in here ain't made a bed yet, and you're in rehab. Right? They're telling you, make your bed. Why? I'm going to get in it again tonight. What the hell do I have to do that for? Stupid. Do your dishes. I don't do dishes. No dishwasher here? What? Look, I was that immature. I was that guy. I'm that guy. You know, unfortunately. You know, I had to learn how to live here. I had no idea. I had no clue. I had no clue what it meant to be an adult when I got here. No clue. None. So look, we got to overcome that. We have to overcome that spiritual sickness. You know, and Bill targets 3 specific areas. He targets the resentments, he targets and the anger, and he targets the fear, and he targets the harms that we've done other people, especially in the relationship area. Our book says sex inventory. I like to look at it as relationship inventory. Our relationships. Now, I'm going to do a whole week on that. You know, we get to step 8. Defective relationships with other people is the cause of all of our problems, including our alcoholism and our addiction. All of our problems. My defective relationship with God, my defective relationship with me, my defective relationship with you. What else is there? I got along with the dog once in a while, you know? Once in a while. Once in a while, he pissed me off. In conflict. I'm in conflict. And unless I overcome that spiritual malady, I'm doomed to pick up again. I'm doomed to medicate. And I'll go other areas first. I'll go to the porn site first. I'll go to the fast motorcycle. I'll buy another motorcycle. I'll go buy another car. I'll go on a shopping spree somewhere. I'll do something else first to treat it. But that won't last. And I will eventually fall prey because I can't stand this feeling for one more effing second, and I don't give a shit where it takes me. I know where it's going to take me. Try to tell that to some psychiatrist, psychologist who never drank, right? Who's not one of us. They scratch their head like, Jesus. You know? They have no idea what it means to take a drink or a drug against their own better judgment. We know it's going to turn out bad, and we don't care. At least that's what we say. Because what it's going to do for me, I don't give a crap what it's going to do to me. I need treated right now. Right now. And it usually gets set off. Somebody, and we're going to talk about resentment, right? That's the number one offender, Bill says. Resentment usually starts off with that. Somebody hurts my little baby feelings. It's just true, right? I still suffer from hurt feelings. Break my finger. Punch me. Just don't hurt my feelings. That's all. I don't do feelings well. I don't do emotions good. I'm just not good at them. I don't know how to handle them. I don't know what to do with them. I medicated them all my life. Oh, I don't like that feeling. You know, here we go. You know, finish. Fix that. Now what? You know, now what? We need tools. I need a solution. You know, my solution has to be powerful. If you're talking about connecting with a power greater than human power, you better have a powerful ass God. That's all I'm saying. Because that liquor and them drugs are powerful. They are a powerful force. And they do for me what nothing on this planet has ever been able to do for me. So you better have something with some depth and weight when you come to me with this power greater than human power. But we got to get down to causes and conditions. What the hell is going on? How do I get some relief? You know, I don't know if you're anything like me, but all the directions for the fourth step are really in one small paragraph, right? One small paragraph. And if you're anything like me, anybody here but me read like a couple pages and don't know what the hell they just read? Like I read one page and somebody would give me a test on it, I'd fail it, you know? What page were you on? I don't know. What was the first word? I don't know. You know, what was that page about? I have no clue. You know, because my mind is like on tomorrow's day, or I'm still in some resentment from yesterday, or somebody hurt my feelings this morning. I can multitask up here. There's a bunch of different voices up here. You know, they can go all kind of directions. I'm actually reading the words. They're just not hitting. They're just not landing. There's other stuff going on. I can do that up here. I can be talking to you and there's some other conversation going on. That's sick. Yeah, that's crazy. You know, I'm glad it's only two voices now. It used to be a bunch, you know. If we miss those directions, we get over to the fifth step and it says we tell our life story, and that's what we do. We torture some poor sponsor with our life story, you know. But it's quick. It's just, you know, we set our resentments on paper. We list people, institutions, and principles whom we are angry, period. Boom, list, top to bottom, we list them. I'm, you know, just talk a little mechanics here. Didn't say write the story, it said write the names. Mine was easy. Ex-wife, current wife. That's kind of my pattern. You know, police, judges, you know, court system, IRS, my father. Real quick, just boom, that's it. Why? Briefly, we're going to tell the story later. Just write a couple words down that are going to get your memory jogged so that when you go to tell the story later, go top to bottom. We don't want to relive the incident. We want to inventory the incident. We'll relive it later. We don't want to keep changing our mind. List the people, institutions, and principles. Why am I angry? Brief. It's not a project. But here we go back again in the third, and Bill talks about, wasn't our social instinct, our security instinct, and our sex instinct affected by what they did? And there we're back to those instinctual drives again, right? And when we get to that, what was affected by what they did? Was it my social instinct, my sex instinct, or my security instinct? Which one? And as soon as we get there, it doesn't even matter who it was. It doesn't even matter what they did. What mattered is how I was affected. The names become irrelevant. how it affects me becomes relevant. Resentments kill. And by the way, and I'm not going to get into relationships much here, nothing causes resentments more than relationships, right? And that's why we don't get into relationships early in recovery. You know, it's just why. I don't do relationships well internally 26 years sober. You know, like I got to pray on a daily basis. Like, did she really mean it that way? Or, did she really? Twice, 2 days in a row, my wife told me she didn't like what I was wearing. She hates me. She hates me. Right? Why do you always wear the same shirt? Well, I like it. Why don't you wear something different? You got a closet full of shirts I buy. Why don't you wear something different? What do you give a shit what shirt? And I don't say that. I say that to myself, right? I go on to this little conversation with me. Why does she care? My wife knows what I've gotten having that conversation because I just have this stare. And I just kind of stare at her. Right? Last night I come home. This is no joke. I wish she was here. Last night I come home. I got this shirt on that four people said to me, "What a nice shirt that is." I said, "Oh, thank you." I said to her when I got home, I said, and she bought me the shirt, an old navy shirt. I said, "Lonnie, four people said they like this shirt you bought me." Right? She said, "Yeah, it's a nice shirt, but next time wear a different pair of pants with that shirt." And I went. Inside, I don't want to tell you what I was saying, but I played that for a while, like the rest of the night. Part of today. You know, I'll take that to a divorce. You know, I don't know. Am I only one that crazy? I mean, I do. I mean, in my head, you know. Then I realize what's happening, what's going on, because I'm a self-sabotager. I realize what I'm doing to myself. You know, I'm killing myself. I'm drinking poison and hoping she dies. You know, and I get on Facebook and I say I love you, send, and it's over. Don't hurt my feelings. I need validation. Validate me. Thank God she answered. Jesus. Because if she hadn't answered, I'd be like, what the fuck? So I loved her. She didn't say it back. She's on. I see the green dot. I know she's on. She liked somebody else's post. Maybe she's seeing him. You know, whole new scenario going on. Crazy people. I'm sitting in my home group. Look, the word resentment means to refeel, right? It means sentir means to feel. You put a re in front, means to feel again, refeel, right? That's what a resentment is. Somebody hurts me, real or imagined, by the way. Doesn't have to be real. You know, real or imagined, because I, you know, go around all day long recording what people are doing, and usually they're doing it to me. And they probably don't even know my name, but I know they're targeting me. And so I'm sitting in my home group, right, and I'm like, I kind of grew up with these tough love guys in this men's group called the Boca Boys, and I'll speak more about them later, but, you know, first off, they weren't in Boca, they were in Deerfield, and they weren't boys, they were men. I don't know where the name came from, but I think they were Boca wannabes or something, you know. But so these guys are the guys that taught me how to show up in AA and how to behave in AA. You know, these are the guys that taught me not to show up like a bum. You know, to carry an extra shirt with me. Don't walk into an AA meeting looking like a slob. You know, I know you work all day, so carry an extra shirt with you. When you're at the podium, have a collar on. You know, bring a shirt. Just in case, carry a shirt with you. You know, you got holes all over your jeans, go buy a pair of jeans. Walmart's got them for $10. Do you need a loan? You know, I mean, that's the kind of, these guys were just showing me how to show up, you know. And they were those guys that said, you know, shut that phone off, put it down, keep it in your pocket. You know, we don't want to hear it during this meeting, you know, and no crosstalk. Don't be talking during a meeting, right? Now, we're all guilty of that, right? So me, it's my home group. You know, I'm sitting there with one of my sponsees beside me, and I'm sure I'm explaining something very pertinent to his recovery to him. And some old-timer in the meeting goes, shh. What? This is my home group. You know, I look at my guy, did he just shoot me? Did he just shush me?
Yeah, he shush you.
I didn't hear another freaking word in that meeting. Not another word. Like, I couldn't believe this guy shushed me in front of all my guys. Right? Now, that ain't what happens, though. And I play the tape over and over again for an hour now during that meeting. And here's what amazes me about resentment is that the initial act, the initial shushing incident, right, hurt my feelings. But as I replay it, it hurts worse. It hurts worse than the initial incident. And when I get outside, I'm fuming. And one of my guys said, what's wrong? I said, guy told me to shut up in the meeting. Really? I said, yeah. In front of everybody. He told me to shut the fuck up. He said, he told you to shut the fuck up? He said that to you? Yeah. Man, I wouldn't take that. I'd get another home. I'd leave the home group. That's what I'd do. Yeah, that's what I think I'm going to do. I'm going to find another home group. You know? And if I keep playing this, I'm going to plot killing this guy sometime before the night stops. Right? Deadly. I mean, that's just where my mind goes. You know? I don't have any control over that. This program is going to give me the control I lack over that. How do I overcome that? That's been my whole life. I seem to have been resented everybody that was ever in my life. Every relationship I was ever in ended where we never, ever talked to each other again. Ever. I never ended a relationship where we were friends down the road. I never understood that. Yes, we dated for a few years. We're just friends now. What? The bitch left you and you're friendly with her? How could you do that? I never could understand how that could happen. I was violent when you left. Violent. I mean, smashing phones and windows and punching cars. I mean, I was just a madman. And whatever came out of my mouth made you not ever want to run into me again. Never changed either. My second ex, same thing. We talk now, though. I don't think she likes me, but we talk. My ex, just a side note, my ex, when I got in here, I said, look, I found out what's wrong. I'm an alcoholic. And she says, oh, that's good. You know, I said, yeah, really, everything's cool now. I know I'm an alcoholic, I just can't drink. How about letting me back in the house? And she says, you're not an alcoholic, you're an asshole. Click, you know. She was right. I was just an asshole who drank. That's really what it was. Somehow I got to overcome that resentment. Really, what I want from you out of this resentment is self-pity. I want you to feel sorry for me, and I want you to validate me so I can be right. You know, the book gives me a tool that I would have never thought of. Never would have thought of praying for somebody that I hated. I never would have thought of that. You know, I suffered terribly from my second divorce. I suffered terribly from it. I came in here, I was consumed with it. Consumed with it. How could this bitch do this to me after all I've done for her? You know, I mean, and that's such bullshit because it's just not true. You know, I mean, I was an alcoholic and addict. She partied with me until we had a child, and she did this thing called responsible. You know, like, we have a child now. We need to take care of the child. Oh, okay, I'll see you. You do that thing. I'm going off on my little merry way here. And I couldn't get over it, man. I couldn't let it go. It was killing me, literally killing me. It literally kills. That internal conflict, that anger, that resentment, that I don't even know how to describe that feeling. I don't know if you can describe that feeling. It's more than anger. You know, it's consuming. It's something that I needed to medicate over. It was really, I was no longer going to be able to do this unless I overcame it somehow. And somebody told me, I opened this book, I never even go to it. Somebody told me to go to the back of the book and read a story called Freedom from Bondage.
And I opened the story, and it was written by a woman, and I shut it. And I said, I ain't reading that, you know. But I ended up in enough pain to read the story. And the story talks about praying for the person you hate and asking for them everything you'd want for yourself. And to do it for 2 weeks straight, whether you mean it or not. And I thought, there's an interesting concept. And I was in just about enough pain to try anything at that point. And I started doing it. And my prayer started like this: God, give her exactly what she deserves. You know, I mean, that was like my first prayer. Yeah. And before the 2 weeks were over, I was really seriously praying for her happiness, whether I was in her life or not. You know, and the book talks about that right after resentments. You know, we had to take a different position. We had to look at these people as we would a sick person, as we are, it says, right? We look at them as we would a sick friend, as we are. We're sick too. And we ask God, big book code for we pray, for their welfare. The biggest act of love that you could show possibly for another person is to pray for them. There is no bigger act of love you could show for somebody than to pray for somebody, even if you hate them. And you can't hate them and pray for them at the same time, so at least there's a moment of relief while you're praying for them. And something absolutely magical takes place there. And there's where the willingness comes in, right? You know, I talked about how I got the second step, somebody giving me a suggestion to pray hour to hour, and I prayed hour to hour, and all of a sudden I got a week together, which is called results from action taken. And then I start praying for somebody that I hate, and all of a sudden the hate is starting to dissolve, and I'm getting results. I'm starting to feel better. I'm starting to get some relief by praying for somebody that I hate. How can that be? I would have never believed it. But it happened, and as a result of the action taken, I got results, promises our book talks about, and now I have faith, and now I have a tool, and now I have something I didn't have before. I have a solution to the anger that doesn't involve a drink or a drug. Something about when you pray for somebody that the God in you connects with the God in them, and even more important, I think more apparent to me, is that the brokenness in me sees the brokenness in them, and we're really two broken people, you know, struggling along this walk of life, and they too have issues, like I do, that everybody is broken. I had no idea that I started to see that everybody has their problems, everybody has their issues, that I've got people, I want people to act in a way that I'm incapable of acting. I can't be perfect, but I want you to be. I fall short, but you shouldn't. And that praying for somebody, you know, all of a sudden you see them for a human being, for somebody who suffers like we do, and you start to get relief. And where the real relief came for me is right after that. And the book talks about shows us a three-column inventory, but they speak to a five-column inventory, because it says, referring to the list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs they have done us, we look at our own mistakes. We took their inventory, now take ours, right? We took their inventory, now look at yourself. Go look in the mirror. Yeah. You resent your wife, why? She had you arrested. Why'd she have you arrested? You assaulted her. You resent the police. Why? They arrested me. Yeah, they were called to the scene. It wasn't let's go get Pat Knight, you know? It was that somebody called 911. They had to respond. I resent the IRS. Why? They attached my checking account. They took my money. No, they took their money. You owed it. They took it. All of a sudden, I start seeing the truth in this moral inventory, truthful inventory, an effort to face the facts, find the facts, face the facts, and see the truth about ourselves. All of a sudden, I see the truth, and the truth is I set the ball rolling in all these situations, that people were reacting to me, that I was bringing out the worst in them by my behavior, satisfying those instincts. She left. Why? You cheated. Yeah. I mean, just all of a sudden, I'm no longer a victim. I'm a volunteer. Right? I volunteered for this mission. Immediately, I'll tell you, I got like four names down on my four-step, and I went, oh my God, this is all my fault. And it is. And it is. Oh, are they sick too? Do they have issues too? Yeah. Yeah, they did. But I sure wasn't helping them. Yeah. If nothing else, I was feeding into it. Yeah. And most of the time, they were reacting to me. You know, Bill talks about a fear inventory. You do the same thing with a fear. Why am I afraid? You know, what am I afraid of? Why am I afraid? How does that affect me? How does the fear affect me? What, is it socially? My security instinct or my sex instinct? Because that's all that really matters to me is how I'm affected. It's all that ever mattered to me is how I was affected. What's the truth? Is it even real? One of the things that was done with me when I did my fear inventory, and I do it with every guy I sponsor, I say, before we start, start from the top of your fear list and read off all your fears. And they read them off, and I go, are any of them right now? No. None of them are right now, right here, right now. They're all either out there or back there. None of them are here. I'm afraid of success. I'm afraid of failure. I'm afraid of intimacy. I'm afraid of not having a relationship. Right? I mean, it's like these yin and yangs where I'm afraid of success. I'm afraid of failure, you know. I'm afraid of using. Legitimate fears. I mean, they are real. I mean, they manifest themselves within us, but when we start looking at them, they're not true. They're incorrect feelings. Mostly imagined. The relationship inventory, sex inventory, if you want to call it that, you know, I could go on for an hour on it. You know, it's because that's where the issue is. I'm in defective relationships with everybody. You know, the book talks about a sex, and what's wonderful about AA, in my opinion, is we are not the sex police. We are not the moral police. We do not moralize here. You know, if it's okay with you and your partner, it's okay. You know, that's kind of the thing. How does it sit within you, right? We're letting you be the judge, right? Deep down, second step, deep down within every one of us is the fundamental idea of God, right? Call it your conscience, call it your soul, call it common sense. We all know right from wrong, and when we're doing wrong, we feel it. Or unless we're a sociopath, we feel some kind of guilt, remorse, and shame when we hurt other people. Charlie used to say it the best, we don't care if you and your partner have sex hanging upside down from a tree, as long as she consents. You know, if you're forcing her in the tree, there's a problem, you know. So we're not judging anybody here, you know. I mean, the rest of the world is in conflict over it, but we're not. We're just not. We're not gonna moralize here. We're just asking you one question. Is it selfish or not? Is it selfish or not? That's really what we're talking about. We're not talking about the sex act. We're talking about how we view sex. We're talking about how we view relationships, how we approach relationships. Is it selfish or not? We can go further with the cardinal defects. Is it dishonest? Is it selfish? Is it inconsiderate? Is it fear-based? We go right there. Judge the relationship by that. We know, deep down within every one of us, we know. There's a part of us that, Ben T. used to call it the soul, the part of us that knows that it knows that it knows. And we know when we're getting into these or we're pursuing these relationships. I've done more harm in pursuit of relationships than I did in relationships. I mean, we're tempted when we look at what instinct was I trying to satisfy. We're tempted in the sex inventory to check the sex instinct. For me, it was less about the sex and more about what you thought of me. What are the guys thinking if I don't have a girlfriend? They, you know, look at me like, look at him, he can't get a girlfriend. Yeah. I wanted somebody to depend on me. I needed the security instinct more than that. Sex scared me. What if I'm not good at it? What if I don't measure up? Oh, Jesus. You know, I'd shoot myself if she laughs, you know. I mean, that scared me. I'd much rather you think I'm having sex with her than actually having sex. Because the guys are important. What the guys think is important. What you think of me is more important than what's really going on. You know? So they give us, I think, well, how crazy is it that sex inventory ends up on page 69? How does Bill pull that off, right? But they just look, they have to ask us, who did we hurt in pursuit of relationships, in pursuit of sex relationships? You know, what did we do? What instinct was I trying to satisfy? What harm did we cause them? And what's the cardinal defect? Simple lists. Simple lists. We're going to tell the story later. And they give us three prayers for sex. And mostly it's inventorying ourselves. You know, what are my motives here? Are my motives selfish, dishonest, inconsiderate, self-seeking? Are they fear-based? What are my motives here? And we know the answer to that if we want to hear it. Or are we just once again trying to satisfy an instinct at the expense of somebody else and cause some more harm, cause some more guilt and remorse and shame in my life? As I start to remove these things, as I start to peel the onion, as I start to see that the resentments are my fault and they start to fall away because 95% of them are imagined, right? As I start, they start to fall away, some sunlight starts to shine in my life. As I see the fears are not real, they're imagined, two-thirds of my mind opens up, my thinking starts to clear up a little bit, more sunlight of the Spirit starts to shine. And when it comes to the sex inventory, the relationship inventory, and we're going to inventory other harms that we've done other people, we're going to address that in step 9, and that's why in step 9, step 3, decision gets completed, because we deal with the guilt, remorse, and shame in step 9. You know, it's genius. The program is genius. You know, we got a shelf full, a mind full of damaged thinking, and as we start remove the damaged thinking and start replacing it with sane thinking, the sunlight starts to shine, right? And God starts to be exposed. The God within starts to expose him, herself, itself. I don't know. You know, we'll talk more about this prayer. I know we're running out of time. We'll talk more about this prayer thing. And I've come to rely on prayer, but I still to this day don't know exactly how that works. You know, I don't know if prayer actually changes things or if prayer puts me in a position to change. I don't know how all that works. I just know that when I pray, things change. That's all I know. You know? And I've come to rely on it. I've come to have faith in it. Why? Because I've gotten results when I do it. That's why. Not because somebody told me. Because I tried it and I got results. Yeah. We'll talk more about the inventory next week. Thanks for letting me be here. Thank you, sir.
Please join me in thanking our speaker one more time. All right, I'd like to have Stephanie come up for our secretary's report.
Hi, my name is Stephanie, and I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary. In keeping with the seventh tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. I have asked Camilla to please come up and read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many of us in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering, and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic.
Hi guys, my name is Camila and I'm a recovering alcoholic. We are not cured of alcoholism, recovered but not cured. The present presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we will be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for a lifetime. But we have been restored to sanity, and that was the problem. The main problem of alcoholics centers in his mind rather than in the body. We are now sane. Where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
...1940-style Big Book sponsorship from forward to the second edition, Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we have seen, felt, come to believe, and experience is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. May I please see a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? And is there anyone in need of a sponsor tonight? Please raise your hand. Please stand up. Please. Okay, recovered alcoholics, let's please meet this lady up front and get her back to God. Please join us Monday nights for the Big Book Study meeting where the book comes alive. Fellowship is at 6:30 and the Big Book Study starts at 7:15. There is also this weekend on Sunday, November 5th at 11 a.m., the 42nd annual Broward County Intergroup Picnic begins at 11 a.m. The next couple of days are your last chance to get the tickets at $8 because they are $10 at the gate. Mike Chase in the back does have tickets. There's also the 4th annual Gratitude Days weekend and the Gulfstream Group going on in Stuart, Florida. It is a two-day conference starting on the 10th, ending on the 11th. There's also the AA's Got Talent show coming up on Saturday, February 3rd. You can get more information in the back. And that is all the announcements, except for one more. First Presbyterian Church is doing an all-church workday on Saturday, November 4th. There is coffee, and you can sign up at 8:30. Work begins at 9 a.m. More information can be found in the back. See you next week.
Just a reminder, we have a 75-foot no smoking, no vape zone in front of the doors when you leave tonight, so please do not light up or vape until you're 75 feet from the doors. There is an area around the side of the building where the cigarette buckets are. Thank you. We have tonight's session and all of the past speakers' podcasts online for free at alcoholicsandgod.org. I'd like to invite everyone to our Monday night Big Book Study, and those who wish to thank tonight's speaker, please line up down the center aisle to do so. Let's close with seated with the Lord's Prayer.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Say God.
Godspeed.
Can't get it.
zap, zap, zap. Oh, when you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you, baby, baby. Yes, when you laughing, ba 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 ba, when you laughing, yes, the sun comes shining through. But when you crying, on the rain, so stop your sighing, baby, and be happy again. Yes, and keep on smiling.